All right, everybody, this is Adam Reuter for the Baltimore County Informer podcast. And on today's episode, I'm interviewing a Baltimore County Council District 9 candidate by the name of Tim Fazenbaker. Welcome to the podcast, Tim.
Thank you, Mr. Reuter. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
All right, so first of all, I need to disclose that I am friends with Tim, and in the past, I've helped volunteer for different offices that he ran for, that Tim ran for. And now with that out of the way, Tim, I'd like you to tell the audience some contact information, where to find information about you, your website, and if there's a direct way to contact you.
Sure. You can, I give out my personal information for a lot of people that reach out to me. You can get a hold of me at 410-404-6147. Email is tim@timfazenbaker.com. The website is timfazenbaker.com. If you want to find me on X, it's America1TimFaze. And on Facebook, I believe it's, we're just looking at Tim Fazenbaker, and you'll definitely find my stuff there.
And let me spell that for everybody. Fazenbaker. Is that right?
That is correct. Yep.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about your professional background and your connection to District 9.
So I grew up here in Dundalk, Sparrows Point. Spent my teenage years in Sparrows Point, but went to Dundalk High School. So I'm born and bred here. My professional background is I was an executive VP in the mental health field for many years. That moved into medical and hazardous waste. So I've had a lot of experience with that in terms of our water stuff down here. Lost my career actually when I got involved in politics due to politics, and I opened my own business for a few years. And right now, I am looking to represent the great people of Dundalk, Edgemere, and Rosedale.
Okay, great. So, cost of living is a daily thought on people's mind. It's increased, I think, every year, but certainly since 2020. What are some ways, if you're elected, you would help the people of Baltimore County?
This question is, it's very complex, but the first thing we need to do is attract a innovative and powerhouse type industry back to Dundalk. We had the steel plant. It was visionary 100 plus years ago, and it anchored everything in this region of the country. And since that's been gone, things have been getting worse and worse in this area. So it's not the same community where I grew up, where many of us grew up. But what we need is we need to attract business, something like AI infrastructure here, where you're bringing high-tech, high-end, affluent jobs. And then you also have the trades jobs that will be servicing the AI infrastructure. You have a pipeline of blue-collar workers that are making great incomes now servicing that. Along with that, now you have cleaned up water with the bay, and you start having this area be a luxury, a desire for people to come to. So now you have a thriving community where people want to live. But in order to do that, now you have to make sure that it's safe. And you need to make sure that our resources are going to the people that deserve them, which means we need to cooperate fully with ICE. We need to cooperate with our law enforcement to make sure that this is a safe community. Our resources are going to our elderly, our disabled, our children, our people in need. And then we need to make legislation so that we take care of the people here in our community, and we find ways to make sure that they are getting the best revenue that they can with most minimal cost and lowest taxation possible. That's how we do it. It's very simple. It can be done. Unfortunately, we've had inept and ineffective leaders for a long time who didn't take pride in this community and find a vision for it. That's what we're going to do.
You touched on it a little bit, but what do you think about public safety and criminal justice for Baltimore County?
Some people who follow me know that a little over a year ago, I posted about a 12-year-old boy who was jumped by 10 or 15 kids in Middle River. And we did everything we could to get the state's attorney to say, yes, he would take up charges. The police did everything they had to do, but it was stopped because Governor Wes Moore and his Vince Scaraldi juvenile person would not release the information of those other minors so that that child could get a peace order or protective order against those kids. And his policy was, if you're under a certain age and you commit a crime, it's just washed away. That needs to be handled. And in order to do that, we need to face the fact that we need to look at our houses first, and we need to make sure that we're trying and encouraging people to raise children in the best environment possible. You know, two parents, you tend to have less incidents with children with two parents. Doesn't always mean it, but you can do that. We can incentivize people to try to have a more nuclear family. We need to make sure that if children are having issues, or anyone's really having issues with mental health issues or addiction, we need to have a mental health hospital and facility here where people can go and get the resources they need, get them off the streets for themselves, but also for the community, because it's not a safe environment. And as I talk about, if you look at, you know, recently with Irina Sarutska in Charlotte, and her killer had been arrested many, many times, along with other people in the that's going on. These people have long records that just keep getting put back into the street without getting care. And then all of a sudden, something goes viral where it's recorded that they harm someone and kill someone. And then it's like, how did it get this far? Let's be proactive, get these people the help they need, get them off the streets, and make sure that we're protecting them and we're protecting the public.
In District 9, there's an area called the North Point Government Center, formerly North Point High School, and it was controversial a few years ago. It's kind of been in limbo for the past few years. What are your thoughts on that property?
Mm-hmm. That property brought Dundalk together and rallied around the fact that that was our public land, and it was being taken from us and being sold to developers. Now, in Baltimore County, like many other places around this country, the developers tend to run a lot of things, and they get what they want because they give the money to politicians. Well, that's not my style. My belief is that's our property. It's public land, and the people, we have the say of what should be done with that land. If they want it to be a government center, that's great. If they want it to be a park or anything along those lines, that's up to the community. That's not up to politicians to decide. So my job and my role will be to get community input to decide what would be best for that location, because right now it's a dilapidated building there where they made sure that nobody could pretty much be in there, except I think the police SWAT team is in there. But that goes back to the community, because the community, the people, have the power and the choice of what that land should be, not politicians.
Why did you decide to run for county council this year?
I wasn't involved in local politics until I had children, and I started to realize some of the things going on around me were affecting the life of my kids, my family, and my community. As I started to go to the meetings, I realized there were ineffective and inept leaders or elected officials that were making these decisions, and it looked like it was pay to play to me. So I started going to meetings, and I called out the elected Republicans down here, as well as the Democrats, but there aren't elected Democrats down here. And I quickly realized you either have to be a team player or no party would want you, which that made me even more energized, because I'm an American and I care about America and my community before I care about any party. So I'm an elected Republican now for the Central Committee, which means I help shape now the Republican Party's views, which is one of the hardest jobs I've ever had in my life, to deal with the establishment there and the differences of opinions between what this community wants versus what the party wants. So this time around, they moved from 7 districts to 9. And in 9, it coalesced this district between Dundalk and Edgemere and Rosedale, which made it much more community-based than what it currently is, which includes other areas. There should be a vacancy as well. The current councilman, his area is now split, but I don't believe he will be running due to some personal issues that he has. And because of his issues, many times people came to me for constituent issues. If they had a pothole, if they had damages with the street, if they had a neighbor dispute, anything along those lines. So for years, I began to really fill the vacancy that our current councilman really did not fill. And I took pride in that. And I helped people as much as I could. And I worked with one of the state delegates and his infrastructure to actually be able to find ways to solve these solutions. Then I realized this is the position that makes me closest to the community, where I can deal with the issues on a day-to-day basis, and I can bring in an excellent team that is going to handle these issues and be completely different. And much like the Trump administration, where you tend to know a lot of his secretaries, this will be the same with my administration, where our team is going to be responsible and we're going to be very transparent and we're going to get things done.
And I'll put some editorializing in here and say, you guys will earn your paychecks.
Yes. Yep.
And gals.
Yes.
let's see. So, speaking of Rosedale, because I don't want to exclude them from this conversation, Do you have any plans for the other part of District 9 that you don't live in and maybe don't drive through as often?
Yeah, so with Rosedale, they carved it out, so not all of Rosedale is in our community. So it's unfortunate for Rosedale that they are stuck in the middle, where half of them are with me, half will be with a different district. First thing I started to do was contact many of the residents in Rosedale, and I asked them first, what are your concerns for the community? What would you like to see? And it was very similar to what I would get in Dundalk and Edgemere, which is, we want the illegal immigration handled. We want to cooperate with ICE. We want our roads fixed. We have terrible roads in this side of the community. We want the influence of city politics to stop, and we want safety, and we want economic growth. So it matches in. But, you know, recently something's gone viral where there was a homeless encampment built up at a closed down business in Rosedale, right on one of the main thoroughfares. And, you know, that became an issue because it does happen in other parts, but this is the biggest one that has been noticed, and it's in Rosedale. So in my community, we will definitely be focusing on bringing Rosedale the best that we can to Dundalk. And there is, look, it's not completely symmetrical or it's not a complete cohesion between the two communities, but we share a lot of the same values. We have the same concerns. Those issues will be addressed, and we will have people, including myself, at any community meeting or events that are going on in Rosedale, because we don't want them to feel isolated and neglected, much like currently Dundalk and Edgemere feel with the current makeup and the way that our needs get swept under the rug.
That's actually the perfect word to put it, neglected. And I believe that for some reason, time and time again, and I really had high hopes with the current county councilman, that even though, you know, he may only have one vote out of seven, that at least, you know, we get kept informed about what's going on. I mean, the reason I called this news outlet the Baltimore County Informer was because I thought that, you know, there was this big information gap of like, what the heck is going on locally?
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example, Tim. And I know that you probably drive by this area, or at least once a week, the Burger King and McDonald's on North Point Boulevard.
Yes.
Okay, you're familiar with that.
Of course, yes.
There is currently water gushing out of the middle of that intersection.
Every day.
And I don't know why. I want to know, like, is that going to be fixed? Like, what's the timeline on that? Because my concern is that one day I'm going to be driving myself to Burger King and I won't be able to make that left turn because a sinkhole happened.
Or you might be in that sinkhole.
Yeah.
The good thing about your main vehicle is it's kind of a boat, so you'll be floating in the water there. Now, I do have to say, the other night, I believe it might have been last night, my wife had asked me about it because she notices it as well, that it's always wet there. Now, my belief is...
This just started. I go to Burger King twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
That just started, and I'll tell you, last night I was driving home around midnight, and the previous night was New Year, so I was driving home around 2 a.m., and I was concerned about that turning into ice.
That is true. But I will tell you, I've seen it for about a month at that location.
Okay, you might be right.
And I it's, well, we both in that same area, but my wife does like McDonald's Coke, so I'm there quite often. And what I surmise is that that development that has been put there, the overdevelopment of our area, puts a strain on our infrastructure. And the way a lot of these developments happen, it's the burden of the infrastructure and those costs keep falling onto the taxpayer. And it's quite possible that that infrastructure is not suffice for that development that they have in that area, along with all the other thousands of units they have been erecting in this area. So it could be something different, but it never was like that. So these are things that need to be addressed. And you know, if I were councilman first, you know, I'm very transparent. People who know me know that I post and talk about everything, whether I completely know the information or not. I get that conversation started.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that I would say, hey, look, this has been going on. We notice it. We're going to have people looking into it. And if you have any information as well, let us know. And we will get it fixed because it is a danger to happen. And I can say, you know, I've had family that worked for the water department, and I've seen sinkholes happen. I've seen the infrastructure under the ground just erode and everything cave in. That's what it looks like. And that can be a very dangerous situation. Even if it's not dangerous, let's say, that's still going to be an inconvenience for many people when they have to lose their water. Or even like you said, with the ice. Because it is cold right now, that thing will freeze over. It is a very dangerous turn. And it in today's age, that should not be happening, especially with all the taxes and money that we put into this government. That should be fixed, along with all these streets in this area. That's why I've heard it said before, make Dundalk's roads great again, because where are our tax dollars going? Because we have the worst streets in this entire county.
Well, I got to tell you, even the Lutherville area, which I was in last night, they are being, you know, ignored too. So, ironically, it's not just a Dundalk thing, believe it or not. It's all over the county. I mean, I don't know what our taxes are going to. And here's another thing I wanted to bring up, because you said it. We have all these developments going on. And for the ever since the developer impact fee law has been or ordinance has been put in place, somehow, some way, and I'm kind of being naive on this one, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. facetious. Somehow these developers get waivers for these impact fees. So would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, this is a pay-to-play system that has been going on forever. It seems to be worse, and it basically goes like this. Hey, I want to run for government. I want to be in a position of power. I need money. Developers go, hey, we'll take care of everything you need. You can be our puppet. Now, maybe it doesn't get said completely like that, but when you look at people who begin to run for office, and I can think of one currently, a new person somewhat that is running for office who had a meeting. He had an event, and it was full of nothing but developers. And developers will send out the top donations that they can, because if they believe that you will win and you will do their bidding, not just developers, others will do it too, then they think they have a puppet in office. Look, money in politics has been said that it's evil. Politics can be evil itself. But when you have people who are beholden to raising money and political parties, all of a sudden things get shifted on their priority. The priority needs to go back to actually running on your name and running on your record of what you do and can do for a community, not how likable or electable you are, and how much money you can raise. So these things happen. I've never worked with developers. If anything, developers will be like, oh, I stay away from Tim Fazemaker because he's called us out on different projects all in this area. And it's a shame because we have a great community, and the community wishes have been stop development. Our schools are overcrowding. We don't have the infrastructure. We do not want more development down here necessarily. And they say, screw you. We're going to do it anyway. And you're going to smile about it. This community says, no, we are a tight-knit community. We're standing up and saying we're going to fight back any way we can. And it's hard. And we usually lose at these things. We slow them down. But when I'm in office and I'm working with this community, these will be things that I will put first and foremost on that table to make sure that the community's input is more important than a developer's input.
Yes, I've been closely following different campaign finance reports actually over the past few days, preparing for articles. And wow, the amount of developers, including ones from Dundalk, or at least have Dundalk on their LLC title, mm-hmm. You know, they contribute a substantial amount of money to the different county council people, especially the two who are going to be running for county executive. I still don't think they're officially in the race, but they have, both of them, as of even like last year, because I believe the campaign finance filing has to happen on January 21st.
I believe it's 21st. Yep.
I will have a lot of new information then mm-hmm. to go through. And like you said, I'm speaking to the audience now. You have, and I will help, I will assist in letting the county know who are the developers' buddies, the puppet masters, and who is actually, you know, they may not have the money to put signs everywhere. And by the way, if all of a sudden you see gigantic signs on a main strip of land where there's no other, you know, buildings or houses, mm-hmm. you have to question, how are those signs being erected?
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, it's because developers own that land. They haven't got the permits or the money to develop that land yet. But you better believe that whoever's on those signs, whoever's names are on those signs, they are the developers' best friends.
Yep, you're correct.
Believe me, there's a lot more to come from the Baltimore County Informer regarding these issues because, oh my goodness, the amount of traffic on the Beltway. Now, I will blame the Key Bridge collapse on that, but the amount of just housing and our infrastructure cannot support it. It just
right.
It's already bursting at the seams. And by the way, it becomes a public safety issue because the more traffic you have in any given area, it's more car accidents, which means people are either going to get hurt a little bit or seriously or even killed. I mean, if you really start thinking about it, Tim, and I'm sorry to go off on a tangent here, but you kind of triggered me on this. If you think about it, these selfish pricks, and I'm going to say it, that's not Tim saying it, these selfish people, they took this developer money so they could keep their jobs so that they can then vote themselves a fat golden parachute pension.
Yep.
And they put people's safety at risk, and they put people's quality of life at risk. And I'm quite frankly, I'm tired of it, and I'm sorry I didn't get on top of this a lot sooner.
So you're completely right. And with the Key Bridge going down, it was evident. I mean, it showed that people who think that they can govern tend not to be very good at governing. And this bridge has been, it's been over a year and a half that it's been knocked down, and we really haven't began any real progress with getting this started. And it is now getting delayed again, and it's costing billions more, and it's causing more issues with the roads of the people that live here. And it's causing a headache because that was the main thoroughfare to get from Baltimore County south to either Anne Arundel County or the city or to the airport, anything. And again, this community gets neglected because we don't have that powerhouse business anymore with Bethlehem Steel. That's why we need to be a powerhouse so that we do not get neglected. And I mean, I don't want any community getting neglected, but I will stand up for my community first and foremost. This community is near and dear to my heart. And I put the needs of the people before any governor or any politician or any business. And I will not be cutting deals or working so that businesses can make more money by screwing over other people. My focus is the people here, the small businesses, and so we can have our way of life continue and not turn into another communist area or some area where it's not safe and people don't want to live. That's not going to happen here. We are going to stop that.
Okay, I appreciate that. And I don't think it's a conflict of interest. If, you know, I believe instead of developing new things, we maintain what we already have.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'll just put it this way, if for some reason you get a donation from a road repair company, I'm just saying this in general because I don't know the specific words.
Yes.
A road repair or a sewage repair contractor, you know, because that's what we need now. We don't need any more stuff being built. We need what we already have maintained because it's crumbling. And like you said, because of the Key Bridge, think about all the extra pavement people have to drive on to get around to go to like Glen Burnie or Pasadena, or any of the areas that we used to be able to get to in like 15 minutes. We now have to drive at least to the tunnel, and now all that pavement that used to just be the Key Bridge that would, you know, have daily repairs.
Yep.
Now it's spread out.
Yep. And if I could clarify so it's easier to understand, because some people don't pay attention to the minutiae of all the political workings. The reason why developers and the politicians kind of go hand in hand is because the politicians get the money, but they also get the tax revenue. So if you have an empty piece of land and you want it developed and you're a developer, you make sure that it gets permitted or passed. And in return, the government is getting, say you build 1,000 homes. Now they're getting 1,000 property taxes off of that land where they weren't getting anything but one, you know, regular property tax. So it, in their minds, it benefits both of them and it leaves out the individual. I and many people, we all want nice, newer things, but you're right. We can rehab many of the things that we do have. Or, you know, when you have some buildings that are dilapidated, okay, maybe that's the area where you can build something new. But the community should always be first with its input of what is wanted there.
Yes.
An example I'll give you real quick is the St. Luke's Church, which is in Edgemere, which was just put up for sale. And they were talking about building 30 homes there or something else. And the community, you know, they had different opinions on what was there. So we'll see what's going there. I believe it was just sold to a Hispanic church organization, but I don't know the details yet. But these are things that the community should be aware of and have the say first before any developer or politician.
Okay. And I'm not, you know, I don't want to say that developers in general are bad people. You know, they're business people and that's their, you know, that's obviously their way of making money.
Yeah.
But when we have laws in place that, and one of the candidates back in 2018, who's now a congressman,
mm-hmm.
he ran, one of his biggest things was, I'm going to put developer impact fees in place. And then what happened? Okay, the law got passed, but then every developer got a waiver. So what the hell's the point in having that law in place?
Yep.
So and like you said, not just residential real estate, but commercial real estate will bring in sales tax revenue. I'm sure there's other different fees they collect with, you know, business licensing and whatnot. So, you know, the county stands to benefit, but, you know, my biggest thing as a taxpayer, as a resident, is that I don't know, you know, if the roads are full of potholes and just, you know, bumps and just they're not taken care of. And like I said, there's water main breaks happening. I know there's one in Middle River that was, I mean, it was going on for, I think, a year or two, and finally the land did cave in. And that's my concern about that, that intersection I said earlier. But all these little things add up, and you're like, where's our money going?
Yeah.
So, speaking of that, if the county, for some reason, faces budget constraints for whatever reason, what is one specific area of the county budget that you would be willing to cut and sacrifice? And what is one area of the county budget that you would fight to protect?
So that's a great question. And I would have to get more detail into what kind of funding is going into some of these avenues. Now, obviously, I'm a big proponent of education. And I think more than half of our budget, which I believe is $4 billion a year, so more than half of that goes towards education. And it's not that I would want that to be stripped of anything, but I think there is a lot in there that needs to be protected, but a lot in there that probably needs to be cut. As we've seen, there's been a lot of fraud going on all over the place, a lot of waste. You see these DEI programs throwing money into things. You see a lot of things with these NGOs where it's another pay to play and funneling money. There are, so to answer that question directly, I would say I want to protect the education, but I think it needs an overhaul. It needs to be examined.
An audit.
An audit, yes. And I believe I have people who are auditors. I have people that will be working with me to make sure we do as much as we can. You know what? And if it's only, say we save $300,000, that's $300,000 that's less on everybody's burden. So, but I do want to protect the schools and the education, but I want education, not indoctrination. Now, one area where I definitely would really think that we need to cut are these NGOs, nonprofits, because we are seeing the amount of fraud and pay to play is exorbitant amounts of money going into these things. And I have personal experience with other people and constituents that have came to me and said, look at this, I'm being sued with taxpayer money because of this nonprofit. And then you look at a nonprofit. One of my opponents in this race potentially started a nonprofit last year or back in 2024 and was given, I think, $250,000 to have a nonprofit. When I looked up the nonprofit, I'm like, okay, sounds nice what you do. You entertain elderly and seniors, but what are you really doing? $250,000? Oh, how much are you paying yourself? Well, just saw today, some people are paying themselves $500,000 to be a CEO of a local nonprofit. You know, the community handles a lot of these things, and nonprofits do have a role. But I think a lot of the stuff that the nonprofits handle is probably fraud and can be pushed aside so that the communities can handle these things. The churches and synagogues or whatever can handle these things. That is one area ripe with fraud that needs to be looked at. That would be the first area where I would look at cutting a lot of the waste and fraud.
Well, speaking of that, this past year has been a clown show with the Inspector General's office, Kelly Madigan, who I respect the work of. She was stifled by an individual. I'm not going to name him yet. It is a him. Well, they're all hims now on the county council.
Mm-hmm.
But she was stifled by someone who I've been looking into, and let's just say his paperwork has not been exactly up to snuff.
Mm-hmm.
Article to come soon, or articles, series of articles. But the question I have for you, Tim, as a candidate, is what are your thoughts on an inspector general's office? What powers do you believe they should have? And what do you, if you have an opinion, if you know enough about it, the Kelly Madigan situation?
Yeah, I met Kelly a few weeks ago in person for the first time, and I've been following the issues going on. So for people who don't know, this is a position that was created that basically is, to make it easy, is an auditor of where the funds are going. And when she started to raise questions, they began to push her out. And she actually had to step down. Well, she stepped down because of many reasons, where it was a hostile environment, let's just say. They let her go at one time and brought her back. But what she was upset about was she did not have control of what she needed to see. And so it began to look like there was more fraud, and she couldn't do her job effectively. So what I would like to have is somebody like Rob Daniels, who ran for judge before, or someone of that nature, where they're in the position of an inspector general, where they have the autonomy and power at any time to just pull records and put them online and say, here's what we're investigating, here's what we're looking, here are my findings. It should be that clear cut, because if anybody has concerns about where their money, their taxes are going to, it shouldn't be that way. It should be very clear and concise about, okay, here's what we got, here's what we paid for, there was no pay to play. Politicians don't want that out there. They want to hide it. That they, them, that you said was a him, was probably just trying to protect themselves, because we don't know what was in those records. So we probably will never know, because now we don't have an inspector general, and we don't know when we're going to get one. But Kelly tried her best at that position and fought the powers that be. And I'm sure we're going to fight that same situation when I get in there, but we are going to push and push. And the best thing, the best disinfectant is sunlight. And one thing that I have been known for is, regardless of party, I put it out there and let the people decide what's going on, because I'm not the expert on every single thing, but the people need to know, and they make their own decisions. And that is exactly what we're going to do.
Well, I hope you stick to your word. I'll put it that way. And I do trust you. Look, I am a type of person that does not like politicians. And as I said earlier, I don't normally volunteer for anybody's campaign, but Tim earned my trust by, I mean, all you have to do is go to his social media pages, whether it's Facebook or X or Twitter, formerly Twitter, and see that he's constantly, just like myself, exposing different levels of government corruption. And, you know, it's the reason I ran for office. Sorry to throw this into you. 4 years ago, I said, enough is enough. I can either sit on the sidelines and complain, or I can get on the field and try to actually make the change, because, you know, you're powerless. You're powerless, and it feels like you're just seeing this stuff. I mean, the fact that in an inspector general's office was not put into place in Baltimore County, as big as it is, mm-hmm. with as much money as it is. You know, little small towns in Kentucky have inspector general's offices, but big old Baltimore County didn't have one. Well, there's a reason it didn't, and it's because they were always trying to hide things. I'll give you an example, Tim. Mm-hmm. One thing I noticed at these county meetings, they always like to have these little consultant contracts that are trying to, like, these third-party contractors, they spend, like, sometimes, you know, easily over $60,000, sometimes even into the six figures, on these, like, consultant contracts. And you're like, why? Don't we have enough county employees that can look into this kind of stuff?
Yep.
And that's where the grift, to use a modern word, comes in. And like I said to people who are listening, just go into, you may or you just, like with certain people in national politics, you may not like them personally. Not everybody likes me. You know, I might not have
nobody likes you.
The best demeanor, you know, I may not shave more than once every 2 weeks, but let me tell you something. I care about Dundalk. I care about Baltimore County. I've lived here all my life. Tim has, grew up in Baltimore County, in the District 9 area. He's lived here most of your life, right, Tim?
Yes.
And you don't want to see this place waste away. You're sick of it, right? Yeah. You're sick of it.
This is a beautiful area, historic. You have the, you know, from the revolutionary times, but we, you know, significant in the War of 1812. We have farms. We have beautiful waterfront. We have We had the Veterans Hospital, which is a whole other story where they, the politicians kind of gave it away. But you have hardworking people. You had the Irish that came here and really pushed the steel plant in the very beginning. And then you had an influx of everybody else coming here and made it the powerhouse. And, you know, if it honestly, if it weren't for Dundalk and the steel production that we were putting out in World War II, the world might look completely different. So this is a breadbasket of what it means to be an American, because look, you have everything right here. And people have always said, if you win Dundalk, you win the governorship to Maryland, because Dundalk has affluency, you have poverty, you have farms, you have industrial, you have everything here. But
we even have horses.
Yeah,
we even have horses. I didn't know we had horses until like last year.
Yeah, it's a beautiful area. You know, it has its issues. You know, and it's what matters to me most is when I was growing up, I remember teachers and others telling me the motto of Dundalk was, we take care of our own, mm-hmm. our elderly, our disabled, and not to just run away when you became successful in life, but to give back to the community that is given to us. And they did the same. We're doing the same. And I want to encourage the next generation to do exactly the same as that. Give back to this community. Make it better than what it was. And we have that chance to do it right now.
Yep. And, you know, the more that people can be self-sustaining, the less crime.
Yeah.
And a lot of people forget that. It's like, yes, if we can get back to the point where, you know, there's low unemployment or ideally no unemployment. I don't think we'll ever get to that, but I don't even think that's even been in the history of mankind where there was zero unemployment. But, you know, people shouldn't be worried. I mean, I'll give you an example. Let me put it this way. Relatives of mine had to be helped out financially because cost of living became ridiculous. And, you know, we should never, I'm talking about elderly relatives.
Yes.
And we should never get to the point where that happens and where people who, you know, had their savings stripped of them because things just got so expensive, from food to utilities. I mean, God, almost said a cuss word there. Gosh darn it. The BGE bill, man.
Yep.
You know, I'm just like, and that's not something necessarily that's Baltimore County related, but these people who have supposed to be, they're supposed to be our representatives, Tim. They said, you know what? We don't care because we're making ours and we have a ton of money and it's not going to affect us. The public safety isn't going to affect us because we live in a gated community. Screw the rest of the people. You know, like you said, you got to give back. Not you, I mean, if you're a good person, you give back. If you've reached that pinnacle, you give back to where you came from. And I mean, you know, we both, you and I have grown up in the District 9 area. We live in the District 9 area. And unfortunately, the representation that District 9 has received over the past 10, 11 years hasn't been the, you know, ideal. I'll just put it that way.
Right.
So let me wrap this up so you can get back and enjoy your Friday evening. So I was going through older bills at the county level, the ones that passed. And I'm not exactly happy with a lot of them because I just, for whatever, you know, different reasons, every bill's different. Do you have a plan to have some kind of like repeal package to sponsor some kind of bill, you know, that goes back even 20, 25, 30 years even, and just goes through all the different bills that are still in the books and possibly repeal, I'm sorry, not the bills, the laws, the ordinances mm-hmm. that are still in the books, go through the county charter, which for those who don't know, it's essentially the laws of the county. And go through that and make sure that you don't have like little things that don't make any sense logically, reasonably. Do you have a plan for that?
Of course. I talked a little bit earlier about someone that I might bring on and to fill a certain position, but this is where I'm really focused, where I have people that I know would be great at doing these types of roles to working on in my in my office, in a sense. They would be going through these things with me and looking for ways that we can save people money and give people an easier life. And one example of that, with the cost of living being crazy, because of one of the main reasons is because of the energy cost in this state, which is because we've shut down a lot of plants. The green energy people have pushed so much that they've driven these costs high because we're not even producing energy and we're getting it from different states. But the one thing that you can do right away in this county is repeal that bag tax, that bag ban that was enacted a few years ago, where if you don't know, you go into a store and they don't have bags anymore for your for you to wrap up your products. So, oh, but if you want a bag, you can pay whatever it's going to be. It depends upon the store. But let's just say, even if it's 10 cents that you have to pay, that's 10 cents every time you go to a store. That adds up to people who are worried about COLA, cost of living adjustments. Those things eat away at your income. That is the first thing and one of the first bills that I will look at repealing and getting that off the books to give relief to the people. And I'm old enough to remember when I grew up as a little kid in the 80s, it was, we need to stop paper bags to save the trees, use plastic. And now it's, oh, no more plastic. You got to go back to using the paper bags if you get a bag at all. And I'm like, well, what is it? Do we care about trees or not? But you know what I care about more is the people. So we need to make sure life is easy and the way people want it to be, and then we can work on these other issues. But when people are struggling and people are even losing their houses and living in tents and living on the street, we need to make sure that we take care of them first before we worry about anything else when it comes to paper or plastic or any kind of agenda that people have. How can you be a good steward of your community when you're worried about little things, these minutiae things, taking money from people for whatever your agenda is, when you have people in your community that are suffering like that? Until every single person in our community is taken care of, those types of things should never be even on the books. That's the first bill that I'll be going after. And then we will be continuing to look through everything else and see what we can find to give relief to the people in District 9.
Tim, about a year ago, I had read a message that was posted to Facebook about an elderly woman who apparently somebody had like dropped a toilet on her lawn or something. And then the county code enforcement, instead of digging into it and knocking on her door, maybe sending a letter and asking, hey, how come there's a toilet on your front lawn?
Mm-hmm.
They just fined her like, I think $600 or might have been more than that.
Yep.
If I contacted the local county councilman and I never heard back from them about this. Yeah. And I'm curious to know if someone like myself were to contact your office and let you know about some kind of weird thing like that, how would you handle it?
My team, well, first of all, the code enforcement needs to be addressed. And my direction to anybody in these types of positions, including my team, will be, you do what's right for the person first and the community before you ever worry about fining somebody for that. It doesn't take much to realize it's an elderly person. Someone probably dropped off that toilet, or maybe they didn't, who just say, maybe she got it out of the house, but she can't pick it up. Do something. Be a human being and take care of your brother. And then if the person is obviously going to be an issue and they're doing it out of spite, okay, well then that's when code enforcement can say, well, okay, we're going to fine you. But you take care of your people. There's so many times, I just want everybody to think about if you have elderly parents, or even if you have little kids, they can't do everything for themselves. And, picking up something or getting something to the dump or whatever it's going to be, that's a challenge. But we as parents, or we as children, we do those things for our family and friends. That's what our elected officials, and that's what our bureaucrats and people in government should be doing first and foremost. Take care of the person at that house and their needs. And then if there's an issue continuing, then you can address it with some kind of citation. That is just not cool. That is not the way that Dundalk works. And that will definitely be addressed. And even if I don't have direct supervision of those people, they will know that we will continue to lay on them until they handle people the way that they should be handled in this community.
I think that's more than fair, what you just said. And I will say that as soon as people were made aware of this happening, there were at least a half dozen junk remover people and even just people with pickup trucks who volunteered to help that elderly lady out. And, you know, that's what I say, Dundalk, Edgemere, Sparrows Point, even Rosedale, you know, our people, when something like that happens, we come together.
It's always do.
And last question for you, Tim, is without naming names, what makes your approach to county business different from the other candidates in this primary?
Here's the quick, easy answer. I don't care if I win. I want to win because I know I will do what's right. And I'm not looking for a job. These other people, they tend to want the job, the perks, and all that stuff that comes with it. My only responsibility is to the people. I am not looking for a paycheck or anything. Heck, I don't even like government. I think it's, you know, the government's role should be to protect your God-given rights. And all this other stuff and dealing with it is, I see why people don't like politics. I happen to be the Homeowners Association president of the community where I live. And I hate doing it, but I do it because the community asked me to do it because they knew I had an interest in politics. And it takes up a lot of time. And I am not a Karen. So a lot of people, when you think of the HOAs, you know, they have a lot of negatives to them and they have some good. But the people that live in my community will tell you it's been much more, it's much more peaceful. It's been, you know, costs have been low. The volunteering from people in the community has been high. We take care of our own here. You know, we pay probably a lower HOA fee than any other community I can think of for miles. And that's because we put that approach together to say, we take care of our own, we help our own, we volunteer, and we don't just force money on people and try to get something out of this. And, you know, it gives me hope that there are other like HOAs and other politicians or elected officials out there like that, but it's far and few in between. So that is who I am. And any opponent running against me, I ask them, what have you done for your community? Instead of being, you know, named, if you want to be named person of the year or named woman of the year, you know what I'd rather be? Servant of the year. And that is much more important than being anything as an individual.
Well, thank you again for joining me. Can you tell people one more time how to reach you and your different websites and social medias?
Yep. TimFazenbaker.com is the website. You can find me on Facebook at Tim Fazenbaker, and you can find me on X at America1 Tim Faze. I'm everywhere. It won't be hard to find. But if you have any problems, you can call me at 410-404-6147.
All right, Tim. Thanks for joining me again. And go to BaltimoreInformer.com for a summary of this interview. And please share all our podcasts with the different candidates that we'll be posting in the future and in the past. Please check those out. And have a good day, everybody.